Yesterday, somewhere around this time, we started talking about my fear of flying. Mike is obsessed with my fear of flying.
You told a story, this is many years ago when I was on with you, and I know you've told it on the air probably more than once, of, I don't think it's overemphasizing it to say a near-death experience on an airplane. I mean, a situation where you thought it was all over, and mm-hmm. it was people screaming the whole bit. So that got my attention.
In fact, I've had two of those stories, and that's probably two more than most humans.
Yes.
And that's what's led to my adult onset fear of flying. Yesterday when we were talking about college life and getting into the sports at our institutions, and you got to actually fly for a road Iowa basketball game, a tournament game, I believe.
That's
it
right.
Was.
Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yeah. And that was your first time on a plane.
It was. Yeah, I was like 20 years old. Yeah.
So my first flight was when I was really, really little. I remember my parents put me and my sister on a plane to see our relatives in North Dakota or something. But I was like four. I have no memory of that. Then I didn't fly again until I was about 20 or 21. I was
okay.
In college.
Uh-huh.
And that was my first flight, and I really wasn't scared. And so then through my 20s, I didn't fly a lot, but I flew some. And then when I got my first job in this business, I flew more. And until about 30, 32, I was fine. I mean, it always weirded me out just a little bit that, and the part that's weirded me out the most my entire life is the takeoff, because there we are, thundering down a runway at an excessive speed, in my opinion, in this giant metal container,
uh-huh.
and it just doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem natural. So anyway, that always bothered me a little bit, but I never really feared flying. Well, the ticket in our early years had something called the P1 Flyaway, or the ticket getaway.
Fantasy Flyaway.
Fantasy Flyaway, thank you. And what that was the station got a little plane, a six-seater, and we gave away four of those seats to P1s. They played a contest, and if they won those seats, then they got on the plane. We flew Sunday morning to a Cowboy Road game, went to the game, and then flew back that night. Great prize, right?
Sure.
Really cool deal. And so the hosts would rotate. We would each get a road game a year. So that year, and I want to say this is 97, 98, somewhere in there, my game is Indianapolis. And so show up at Love Field and get on the plane. And I took my girlfriend at the time. And so she and I were
now,
sitting.
Now my girlfriend.
She and I were sitting with our backs to the cockpit. So keep in mind, you got a pilot and co-pilot. Our backs are to the cockpit, and then there are we're facing the rest of the cabin, and there are four seats facing us. So in each of the four seats that we're facing are the four P1 contest winners.
Does this involve a reach around from the pilot at any point?
Hey, dude.
Is that
what?
Why do you want to spoil the story?
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Don't release the findings of the FAA yet.
Anyway, it's a great flight, and we're cruising along at 36,000 feet, and everything's fine. And we slowly start our descent as we're 40 minutes out of Indianapolis or something, 30 minutes out. Well, on our very slow, steady descent, all of a sudden we hear a loud pop.
Oh, boy. Never good.
And then you hear the engines revving, something happening. We're not really sure what. Everybody's looking around at each other. And then we kind of start a quicker descent. So I turn around and I say to the pilot, is everything okay? Or the co-pilot is the one I could see. Is everything okay? And he said, yeah, everything's fine. I turn back around and the oxygen masks then deploy above. And I then turn back around and this time I see a red light flashing on the
dashboard.
Instrument panel. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
And I said, are you sure we're okay? And the cockpit, the co-pilot said, everybody put on masks. Put on your masks.
Uh-oh.
And we go into a nosedive.
Uh-oh.
We are going straight down. So the other five passengers have no problem putting their mask on. I can't put mine on. It won't come all the way out of the ceiling. And so
you got a short tube on yours.
Yeah, I got a short tube.
You have to crane your neck up to try to.
You wondered why they were urging you to take that seat. No,
right.
You take this one, Junior.
Great. Perfect.
The one that's taped off. Let's remove the tape. You sit here.
My girlfriend happened to be a flight attendant, and so she had to stand up and, like I'm a 6-year-old, help me with my mask. But she knew what she was doing. So I get the mask on, and this is the strangest sensation of the whole thing. As we're in this nosedive, and, you know, it's the G-forces are forcing our cheeks to do, you know, these funny things, and everyone's trapped and pinned to their seat. I had this incredible feeling of calm, and all I could think of was, all these years I've seen all these movies about plane crashes and news stories, and I can't believe I'm going to die in a plane crash. This is so bizarre. And it was like,
but it wasn't a panic. It was more of like an intellectual curiosity.
Yes.
Thing. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But you had resigned yourself to the fact that it was going to happen.
It was over. I was convinced it was over.
Boy.
One of our P1s on the trip, he was also in a state of calm, and he pulled out a camera and took pictures of everybody in the cabin with their masks on.
Did you ever get those?
Yeah, he sent them to me. I've got them somewhere. In fact, I met, and I don't know if it was the same P1, but you remember Lord Byron who wrote our theme song?
Yeah.
I saw him at an OU Notre Dame game, I believe it was. No, it was the OU Ohio State game last fall. And he now lives up north, but he'd come down for that game, and we talked about the incident.
Wow.
So, and I think he's the P1 that didn't get back on the plane for the return flight home. He went commercial. And he made the ticket pay for it, and I understand that completely. Well, anyway, we're in this nosedive. And I want to say it lasted for 4 to 5 minutes is kind of what it felt like.
That's a long time.
It was a long
time. That's a really long time.
No, it may have been 2 to 3 minutes, you know, but it felt long. And then all of a sudden, we level off. And then we're all looking around at each other, and the pilot turns around and says, okay, you can take the masks off. And then we land, and as we land in the Indianapolis airport, fire trucks, ambulances all around the runway.
Jeez.
So we land, and we're all shaken, not stirred. We get off the plane, and we go eat lunch, and we go to the game, and they're telling us, hey, while you guys are at the game, we're going to get the plane fixed. So what, the P1 that heard that said, I'm not up for that. I'm not riding back on that plane. My thought was, that'll be the best time to ever ride that plane after they've given it the once over. So 5 of us returned, and the flight home, no problem. Well, fast forward about a week, and I'm coming out of the studio, leaving after the show one day, 10 a.m., and I walk out through the lobby, and there are these two guys there in suits. And they stand up, and they say, Mr. Miller? I said, yes. We're so-and-so.
Say your prayers. And they pulled out a gun.
You should have died 1 week ago.
IRS finally got me.
Our first attempt didn't work.
They said, we're so-and-so from the FAA. Could we speak to you for a moment? Okay, sure. So we go into the conference room. And they're interviewing me about the incident. And so they said that what happened was a door seal broke. And that caused the cabin to lose pressure. This is about 6 weeks after the Payne Stewart incident.
Mm.
And I said, that's the Payne Stewart thing, right? That's what happened on their private plane, was a door seal broke. And they said, yes. The difference is you all had already started your descent. Payne Stewart's plane was at 37,000 feet, so everybody was instantly knocked out.
Mm.
And that's why the plane just kept flying until it ran out of gas and crashed. They said the same thing would have happened to you guys.
It just happened a couple minutes earlier.
If it happened a couple minutes earlier. But luckily you were at about 29,000 feet, I think he said. And so the nosedive was the pilot getting the plane down to 10,000 feet where you could breathe. And I said, well, if it had happened at 37,000 feet, we all just put on the oxygen mask, right? And we're okay. And they looked at each other, and I remember the guy looked at me, and he goes, Mr. Miller, do you know what a placebo is? And I said, yeah. He goes, that's basically an oxygen mask at 37,000 feet.
Wow.
He said, you wouldn't even have had time or your mental faculties to put it on. And so we then all made out, and they left.
Whoa.
And
what?
It was, I know it was a weird ending to it, but we had bonded, and so we thought that was the next step.
I just wondered if maybe that's...
Went to the bathroom on each other and
maybe
left.
Maybe that's what had happened once the plane leveled off. There was such a series of relief. Everybody making out with everyone else. That, and were the guys playing with you a little bit, too, when they were asking the question, Mr. Miller, we're told that you lost control of your bowels. Is that... to what extent is that true? Acting like they're writing
this
it down.
This is the doozy mind. This is how Mike's mind works.
We're told that the woman passenger that you were with is quite a tigress in bed. Is that true? I don't want to comment on that, sir.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how full were your pants?
And that's just story number one.
Oh, no.
Would you like to hear story number two?
Number two, yes.
That's all he's been talking about.
As I continue to explain, my adult onset fear of flying is next on The Ticket. All right, story number two that has led to my adult onset fear of flying. This is about 6 years ago, and I'm flying commercial from Dallas to LAX. And going into LAX, on approach, about 1,000 feet off the ground, I mean, we are about to land, and all of a sudden, the plane lists dramatically to the left. And I mean, it tilts almost at a 90-degree angle to where I'm in the window seat and I look to my left and I see the ground.
Wow.
Then what I assume was the pilot compensating or overcompensating, we go all the way to the right. So now the left wing is pointing straight in the sky. The right wing is pointing straight at the ground. At this point, everyone on the plane is screaming. And then we continue to rock back and forth like that for a little while until he finally gets it settled right as the wheels hit the ground.
Jeez.
So then as we taxi to the gate, no message from the cockpit, no message from the flight attendants. The only thing we heard was a shaken flight attendant voice saying, okay, please remain seated until the pilot has indicated
welcome to Denver.
Yeah. So, and then as we're getting off the plane, everyone's wondering what happened. Well, people on the right side of the plane are saying that they saw a plane coming towards us. And so I told that story on the air a couple of days later, and then I heard from that airline, and they said, we looked into the flight record, and it was massive turbulence that apparently happens often going into LAX, and that according to the flight log, the pilot did a great job of stabilizing the plane. I said, was there anything about another plane coming towards us? They said no.
I can't understand why the airline wouldn't have had the courtesy to make some sort of an announcement.
Yeah, that was weird to me. That's what made me think it was a plane coming towards us, because if it was normal turbulence, they might have said, sorry about the rocky landing, but that happens a lot coming into LAX. So, as you see, I've had two scarring incidents, and now every time I get on a plane, I'm shaking.
Well, on the other hand, you have to think that this thing can't touch you now, right? You've come so close twice and have avoided it.
You can't be killed.
Yeah. Boy, you guys have a great point.
You're unbreakable.